Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Now comes to the set, lifts the left leg and delivers. That's a swing and a miss on a fastball that's clocked at 100. Started Monday night. Does feel like it was 2 weeks ago. The 0-2 is cut on a miss. Went to a 100-mile-per-hour fastball again. It will be 1-2 on Pinckney. And Sproat winds, delivers. Well, got him there. When Harrisburg came to town, it will be an 0-2. Swing and a miss, and Cruz goes down on that changeup. Sproat sets, delivers. Swing and a miss!
We're back, and as promised, as I warmed you up in the open and laid out what is the first test of the David Stearns era, the trade deadline and the challenges and prices going up like eggs at the grocery store. Joining me, contributor to Talking Mets, really the brainchild and author. He did 99.9% of the work on that Talking Mets prospect list, David Mills. And David, welcome to the program. Get your best radio voice out. People have seen your work in writing. Now they get to hear the voice. How are you?
I am just fine. I'd be better if the Mets won the last two games, but we're doing okay.
Well, this is what's interesting. I had outlined that I think, and so far the Mets, even though they've had one of the top 10 pitchers that we had talked about on the Talking Mets pitching list sent over to the Nationals for Jesse Winker. But in general, acquiring two relievers and an outfielder, and an outfielder that has, I would say an impact bat. I mean, Jesse Winker may have not been an impact bat the last couple of years, but this year he certainly has been, and he has a history of being an impact lefty bat. The Mets haven't given up anything, I think, of significant pain. I will tell you, David, if they want to upgrade this rotation in a big time way, or the bullpen in a big time way, in a significant way, there's going to be pain. And I have a feeling if they do it, more than just one or two of the top hitters or pitchers that we've discussed over at the newsletter, substack.com/@TalkingMets, will be going somewhere. Do you agree with that?
I do. And I also think that what's happened is that the Rays, as usual, have kind of set the market in place. And they've also made it a situation where if you're getting somebody with who's more than a rental player, you're looking at giving up at least three prospects. So it's 3-for-1 across the board. If it's a rental player, it's a different story. The Mets got Winker for Tyler Stewart. And I actually think the Mets gave away a little bit more than I would have liked to for that, because he was number 6 on our pitching list, actually.
I think that even with a Flaherty, who would be a rental, and someone who's had major injuries, I think you're looking at, I could see a scenario where Detroit would ask for an Acuna or something like that. And I think the prices and ultimately Stearns may have to wait till the 11th hour to see where the market goes. But anything of significance that isn't a Patrick Blackburn or some kind of league average arm that, you know, the Mets just can get for very little, I think is going to cause pain. Ultimately, you have to wonder, and this is unconfirmed rumors, but you're hearing big money guys like Jose Barrios and Blake Snell, guys who have contracts, maybe a little bloated, being available. Maybe, and I said this in the open, maybe the best way for the Mets to go would be using their financial might, basically, at that point.
I think Stearns came in with an interesting philosophy about how he was going to go about building the team. And one of them was basically to say to his owner, look, we don't have to throw money at everything that comes along. And I think Steve Cohen's a smart guy. He understood that position they put themselves in for 22 and 23, really, he got a little lucky that they were able to get rid of Verlander and Scherzer for some really good quality prospects. But I don't think you have to spend I think getting Snell is just a crazy idea. I like the idea of getting Flaherty, but he's a rental player, so you'd give up less. He's having a resurgent year. I mean, look at him. He's about 2.9 ERA. He has 18 starts. He's striking out people. He's getting his fastballs at 98. So that's an interesting pitcher to go after. I'm not so sure that the Mets have to. I think, unfortunately, what happened to Senga and what happened to Scott kind of puts them in a little bit of a hole. Not one that can't be overcome, however. And I do think that we'll see Sprout at some point here, probably right after the September call-up point. There's not a ton of arms. Stearns kind of comes through. He has an interesting eye for pitching. I mean, look at what Alex Young has done since he's come on to the bullpen.
Absolutely. Even Michael Tonkin and Johan Ramirez, I mean, I know they're doing it with different clubs, and the Mets, unfortunately, got caught up in a numbers game. Those were arms that have done okay for the Dodgers, and Ramirez and Tonkin with the Yankees they picked up. Not everybody's worked out. I mean, Danny Young has been up and down and been okay, and you've seen some of the Tyler Jays of the world be pretty awful, but the Mets have done a good job with the scrap heap, at least better than they have in prior years. And I said this as well, and I think it ties into how much prospect capital you want to give up here at the deadline, with the luxury tax being at $300 million, basically. And with the Mets being repeat offenders, you're going to be taxed up to almost, 90%? So it's almost dollar for dollar. You're going to need more of what you see them do this year. You're going to need more of the Alvarez/Vientos cost-controlled type of performances, and especially on the pitching side, elite pitchers now, the Corbin Burns of the world, why wouldn't he get or ask for similar to what Yamamoto got, maybe asking for about $40 million AAV? That's where the top starters in a market are going, or at least north of 30, like Blake Snell. Roster construction and incorporating your farm, it's going to be important for everybody, not just the Rays and teams like that. It's going to be important for the Mets, because then you're going to be after paying dollar for dollar on, the Ryan Stanics of the world, which is what they're doing right now. A wealthy guy like Cohen can get away with it, but there's always a limit. Everybody wants to manage and use their resources as effectively as possible.
Yeah, well, they picked up Winker. I mean, he's got $508,000 left coming to him this year. And so for the Mets, that's $1,016,000.
Sure.
It's not terrible in terms of they're not spending a fortune. But I do think that as the future plays out, we're going to see, I think the Stearns way of doing business is the wiser way of doing business. And that is pick up. That's what they did. They auditioned left-handed bullpen pieces throughout the season. And now they've kind of settled on, okay, I think these last two Youngs are definitely interesting pieces. Do they have to give up something that's interesting? Like I always thought, my son who works in Major League Baseball, he and I have a disagreement. I like Pache, the pitcher from the Rays. left-handed pitcher, but he's got reverse splits. So, but they don't necessarily have to give up something to get him because they have some depth there now that's playing out in a kind of an interesting way. I think that the other thing that we're seeing is a huge shift in what roster construction is going to mean in the near future. I don't think it's a long-term thing. I think one of the things in roster construction is that the bullpens are going to be constructed completely differently. There's going to be a need for two closer types. There's going to be a need for maybe two long men types and then two or three setup guys. I think it's going to change the whole way that we view bullpens. And the same thing for your positional playing rosters. I think we're going to see a lot more teams looking for somebody who has catching experience. Like the Yankees brought up Rice. He was a catcher. Because you can't afford to keep three catchers on the roster, yet you come into situations where having a third catcher can be important. It could even mean the difference in winning or losing a game based on injuries and so forth. But I think we're going to see the guy who has had minor league catching experience or college catching experience being in other situations where they DH or they play the corners, and that's going to be a big role at some point in the very, very near future. And the same thing with utility. Just we've seen the utility players flourish over the last 10 years, and I think that's going to continue to be somebody who has the ability to play infield and outfield like McNeil does, is going to be a valuable piece on every team, not just on three or four teams.
If you look a lot of the positional prospects, if you go just to MILB.com or even Baseball Reference, they are currently playing a number of positions. I think you're right. That's critical. I also think when you start to look at pitching, and I think that's where we'll start with. And by the way, if you haven't had a chance to check it out, you don't have to be a paid subscriber, substack.com/@talkingmets, no G. You can just go there and you basically can get the top pitching prospects that were ranked by David and the top positional prospects. You could see some of his assessment analysis. We'll get to how he did that in a minute. But if you look at roster construction, I have to question, the old adage has always been, and it still holds true to this day, up the middle defense, I hold tried and true, critically important. Good starting pitching, and then you figure out your bullpen. But just based on what you're saying and looking at the cost and uncertainty, Yamamoto is a perfect example. The Mets were in on him. They finished second or third, depending on who you talk to. But he's missed a big chunk of the year. Look at what happened with Senga. You invest in a $35 million a year pitcher, especially for 5, 6, 7 years, and they get hurt, in the case of DeGrom in Texas. Now you've got all this dead money. And unless this luxury tax will get, the ceiling will get pushed up, and that's always a big if with the owners and the Players Association and their relationship, you're really hamstrung. So do you go with, similar to what the Mets have done, a bunch of number threes, like you said, get a couple of long men to beef up your bullpen, incorporate maybe some of these young starters, you know, whether you do it through the bullpen or you moderate their innings like they would do with Christian Scott. That might be a pathway of roster construction that teams finally say, look, I just can't afford to give a guy 7, 8 years and have that sunk cost. Even if it's a wealthy owner, think about the luxury tax. It really hamstrings your ability to make moves. And I think you're starting to see, now it hasn't impacted Cohen, at least not yet. You're starting to see where it almost is a salary cap right now, that luxury tax.
Sure. And, when you go out and get somebody like a piece, which is what I would call Jesse Winker, he's not only a piece, he's a rental piece. I think that Steve Cohen and every team could absorb whatever luxury tax they had to pay on that $508,000 remaining. But when you're talking about pitchers and you're talking about, going after a first-class starter, and you're going to have to pay $40 million. I think you need to start building out of your farm system, because what's happening is you're putting so much pressure on that salary cap. You're going to miss out on what's the most important thing, to get to this point in the season and to be in the position the Mets and the Padres and other teams are in right now, where you can add, not to be hamstrung when you get to the point when you can add. So that, to me, is more important. But I think the Mets have learned the lesson on that. I really do. I think paying Scherzer and Verlander that much money per year on a basically a two-year contract with a third-year option, it's just not going to work. And I think almost everybody would agree at this point. I don't think you even have to be a Mets fan to agree that, you know, that's a bad thing. It's a bad thing.
Thankfully, it's a two-year deal. If it was a 5, 6, 7-year deal, I mean, at this point, you rather go short-term. You have a little bit of pain there if you know that's going to be a difference maker, which they thought with Scherzer. And Scherzer was, to a certain degree, was a difference maker, at least for a year. Verlander, not so much. I mean, that's where it is with these pitchers. And, Dave, if you look at it, we go to the top pitchers. We'll start there because I think in a lot of ways that's what's more exciting, or at least what's been marketed as more exciting about the Mets. Your top five, and I don't think there's any surprise here. Brandon Sproat, Christian Scott, Jonah Tong, Blade Tidwell, Nolan McLean, and I called him Nathan McLean in the open. I don't know where I got the Nathan from. There's a Nathan McLean that's at some point out there. Those top five, and just to give everybody context here, players are the way that David created the criteria, the players are eligible for until their 26th birthday. Hitters with 200 plus MLB at bats and pitchers with 16 starts with 30 appearances are no longer eligible. So Christian Scott just got in under that. We took out any pitcher who was recovering from any kind of surgery. And the 2024 draftees, which were about a week ago, are not included. So when you look at these five, if you want to get a Garrett Crochet or even an Eric Fetty, guys that have some control, I think you might have to give up one of these guys. Are you looking at these guys as untouchable, David, in your opinion?
No. No. I think that what's untouchable to me here would be probably the first three. But anything after that, and then, you know, I like at the end of my list, which is, you know, the 9th spot, 10th spot, I think those are interesting, and I would like to hold on to them. But, no, I could see trading Tidwell. I could see trading Nolan McLean. I think that, you know, when you look for something like that, you're trying to understand, okay, who qualifies? Why do you appear on the top of a list? And, you know, it's the margin here. It changed literally during this season. And that's why I think these prospect lists, when they're not updated in the middle of the season, it's kind of crazy. So that Sproat wasn't anybody's number one when the year started. But he has made such rapid advance through – he's pitching well. He pitches much more maturely than you would think from his age. He's 2 years younger than Scott. And he has an assortment of pitches that are, you know, nice. I talk about in here is he's got a changeup that's just awesome. I mean, I call it filthy. He's got that's for lefties, and then for righties, he's got a slider. He's got a fastball that is in the 97 to 99 range. I mean, he does everything well. I think the only thing is maybe developing this curveball, which a lot of guys have who have three pitches always or four pitches always have a pitch that they're working on. But when he moved, he even flourished more than he did before. So that's an important thing, too. You want when you step up, if you're – and that same thing happened, with the first baseman who moved from Brooklyn to
– Ryan Clifford.
Clifford. Yeah. Same thing happened there. But I think that I would not move him for anybody. Scott, the one thing that worries me is had this forearm elbow issue now 2 years in a row. So I'm not so sure somebody.
He struggled against lefties, very like McGill. I mean, lefties hit him almost at an 880 clip. And you wonder, does that mean his future's out of the pen? I mean, is that a possibility? I know it's too soon to say, but clearly there might be a UCL issue. And he didn't, if you listen to Scott closely, what they're doing now to rehab it, there's a chance he might need Tommy John surgery. So he's like saying, okay, if I'm going to be out till 2026, it doesn't matter if I have it now or 2 months from now. So not really out of the woods there. And it would be curious if he does need TJ surgery, would another team say, all right, I'll take him in the deal, not just him, knowing there's some upside there. And I mean, you're going to be paying for him to be on a big league roster. So basically he's getting service time. That hurts. That kind of plays into it. But, you know, ultimately you wonder if that entices the Mets, who are a bit of a win now, to go out and say, all right, let's put Scott in a deal because he's not going to be used for us till 2026. And we'll worry about 2026 when 2026 comes. You gotta wonder how they're looking at Scott.
I don't think other teams are going to be willing to take a risk on Scott. I really do. I mean, they look at this stuff. Everybody in the industry knows that this is the second year in a row that he's had an issue with his elbow and forearm. So, in my opinion, he's out of the. You know, he's just out of that that entire track of being somebody that other teams are going to look at. I do think that Tong, who to me, I mean, this is probably the biggest jump on my list from where other people had him at the beginning of the year. I didn't have a list at the beginning of the year. I think that he has to be looked at by other teams, and I'm sure that they're interested. I'm sure they're asking for him. I think most teams would know the Mets aren't going to do anything with Sproat. They're not going to be interested in Scott, but Tong they want. And more than anybody else, I'd be shocked if he wasn't the first guy they're asking about.
Yeah, I agree with that. And you wonder if you can get a pitcher with some control, like a Garrett Crochet, does it change your mind on a Sproat or a Tong and say, okay, you're getting arguably, first round pick during the COVID year. Right now, statistically, wins above replacement, the best pitcher according to Fangraphs in baseball. He's not a free agent until 2027, so you get two full seasons plus the end of this pennant race. There's some value there. Not a good sample size, not a large sample size of success. Does it change your mind when, arguably, statistically, the White Sox turn to you and say, here's the best pitcher in baseball. I want Jonah Tong or Brandon Sproat plus... You know, I'll just throw out a position player, Clifford or Acuna. Does that change your mind knowing that you have control of this pitcher for 2.5 years or plus years?
Not for those guys. I'm talking my opinion, my you know, kind of angle that I come at the game and my front office knowledge or whatever. But I think that, those two pitchers have too much upside with a giant ceiling. I mean, they could just be great. That doesn't mean they will be, but they could be. And I really love what I'm seeing from them. Now, you can take anybody else, and I would be willing to say yes. But even from the position players, but those two pitchers, I'm holding on to. Tidwell, I would move. I mean, he's healthy. He's got some really good stuff. But he's moved down on a lot of the lists, as have Vassell and Hamill. As I said, I had Tyler Stewart 6. I really liked what I saw from him. But McClain is another one. I mean, I think he'll do better now that he's given up hitting. But any of those people I put in a deal, you know, Crochet is a kind of a strange bird in the sense that he's represented by Casey Close, who always has this weird stuff that he ends up, not always, but, you know, sometimes his players make these weird demands, and Crochet's demand about he won't sign without an extension. Well, that's not necessarily bad for a team like the Mets because they could negotiate before making a deal. But I think that it really kind of puts him in a whole different category. I mean, he's not willing to pitch out of the bullpen. He's not willing to, in the postseason, to be put into a position where he's not starting. You know, he put a lot of criteria on his ability
for a guy who has no resume other than a half a season here. Let's face it. I mean, some nice numbers,
right?
You're right. I've never seen these kind of demands before. Easy to say in the heat of the moment, get into a clubhouse with 25 other guys and you're trying to do something special, especially in the Mets clubhouse with veterans like Iglesias and now Jesse Winker and JD Martinez and so on and so forth. Easy to do that on social media in a vacuum, much harder to do that when you're facing your teammates, especially if you're close to winning a championship. So I agree with you. I don't think, and truthfully, David, I said this in the open. I just don't think even the Dom Hamels, if you go to the next tier down, Tyler Stewart's gone, but you have Mike Vasil, Dom Hamill, Cade Morris, who's been coming on strong. Yoandre Suarez, who doesn't get talked about a lot, but has been really good. Forget Stewart's absence for a minute. You know, I'm not sure that Stearns, even for a Flaherty or a Fetty or a Jameson Taillon, which I'm trying to figure out what the Cubs are trying to do. They buy Paradis, and now they're going to trade Taillon. This threading the needle now, is this a new thing, buying and selling? I don't know if Stearns gives up any of these arms for guys that, yeah, they have control, but you can buy what they give you in the offseason for next year. And do they make you significantly better in the sense where it's worth the prospect capital and making the playoffs and going further in the playoffs? Making the playoffs and going further are two different things. And I'm not sure that they'll invest in this team. And I heard that Steve Cohen wants to be all in, but I don't think it's the chips to the center of the table by all means possible all in. At least I hope not.
No, but if the Tigers wanted to give up Flaherty for Dom Hamill, I'm in.
You're in for that.
But Nolan McQuain, I might be in for that. Hamill, definitely. But that's a rental player. So, I mean, I think that's as bad as it would get in terms of what the return would be from the Mets. But I am not into giving up too many of these guys. I would give up a couple of them for Crochet, not the first two we talked about. By the way, I would replace Tyler Stewart, move everybody up, and add Wilkin Ramos. I mentioned in here, I didn't expect it to come up again, that what a lot of people don't know is that when players sign with an organization, they first report to camp, they get a height and a weight, and that sticks with them for some of them the rest of their careers. So you got Wilkin Ramos, who's 6'5", and he was 165 pounds when they signed him. And you look at him now, I mean, he's got to be all of 210, so at least. And but he's still listed at 165 on everything. So he has a really fine fastball. He has good control. I saw him strike out the new player, James Woods, from the Nationals. He made him look silly with an incredible, I don't think it was a splitter. My guess is it was a changeup, but he really looks good. So, and he's a guy who they haven't done what the Mets usually do, and that is they make everybody a starter. They use older guys at the highest levels to be relief pitchers, but they start guys to get their arms going. Who am I to argue with that? But this guy's been a relief pitcher for quite some time. He started at 17 in pro ball, and he's only 23, and he's a nice replacement in that top 10.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50. In order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today. If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to countrymd.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's countrymd.com/energy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Bart Stewart.
And he's one of the arms. I mean, he's struggling in the minors right now at Syracuse, but sometimes you have heard that the automatic strike zone plays into that, specifically with walks. But Paul Gervasi, you know, Trey McLaughlin, these are other, you know, bullpen arms. And that's one of the things. Could Ramos, and I don't think you're going to see him this year unless something changes, where they say, hey, look, he was dominant at Binghamton. What's going on at AAA is the ABS, the automatic balls and strikes. Yeah. And then they bring him up, because that's really where this and I really want to prepare Mets fans, because I'm not convinced that the Mets are going to be splashy at the deadline with the bullpen either. I think the fact that they got Ryan Stanek, I know he struggled today, and Maton way before the deadline showed you that Stearns saw the prices being a little bit outside of what he thought was a proper value. When you hear every reliever, rental or otherwise, is requiring two out of your top 15 prospects, that's expensive for a Kirby Yates, for a David Robertson. I mean, look, the Mets got a decent haul for Robertson last year, so they know they've been on the other end of that. They know. You got to figure that it's going to be that plus for any of these starters from Flaherty on up. So this is, I wouldn't be surprised if the Mets say, hey, this is not changing our position that dramatically with who's out there. Now, that will not be a popular media position. They'll get killed. But I think those who understand baseball, those who dive deeper than the surface when it comes to assessing the team and talking about the team, will appreciate it. But it will be very interesting how that'll be received, because I'm not convinced that there's more moves to be made. I think they could very likely say, hey, this is too expensive for us. And they will be destroyed by the mainstream media if they do that.
Yeah, well, one of the things a scout said to me yesterday was, you know, certain teams can make moves and they're not upset by excessive media coverage. But that's not the case for the teams in New York. And, you know, they're going to suffer from that media coverage. But I will say this. The Mets have, in terms, we're talking about pitching prospects, they have the top three guys, in my opinion, are as good as it gets in terms of what you could have on the farm and really making a move. But then it gets, in my opinion, a little bit thinner. But also, there's a lack of southpaws. And there's not one guy here, not just in my 10, but also in my 3, attracting attentions, which is my other phrase for honorable mention. They're all right-handed pitchers. So the Mets really need to go out there and search. Now, their first pitching draft choice was a left-handed pitcher from Duke, and that's good. But then there weren't any other left-handed pitchers, as far as I know. So I thought they would go out there and try to grab 4 or 5 southpaws, but from what I'm told, there may not have been that many southpaws out there, especially after the first 2 or 3 rounds.
And it makes you wonder with them signing Jonathan Santucci, left-handed pitcher, like you said, out of Duke. They also have Nate Dome. They've signed a couple of pitchers. Was that changed their mind on giving up some of these guys that we've talked about? Now, we're not counting the draftees into this equation, but you got to wonder that. And then the question I have for you before we get to the hitters, is there anybody in the bottom five, because you have the top five, that you could easily see at this time next year or sooner, similar to a Jonah Tong jumping in there? If you had to put a bet down, which one of these guys is going to jump in? And maybe next July, we're talking about him being untouchable, i.e. Sproat, things like that.
Well, Suarez, who I had as number 10, will now move up to number 9, is a very interesting character. He's Venezuelan. He's 24. He's going to be a Rule 5 eligible guy after the season. So will the Mets try to hold on to him, try to make some clear some roster space for him? He is a really interesting pitcher. He's got a really nice arsenal of pitches. And what I like is he's reduced his walk rate, which I mentioned there, from 16.6% to 7.2%. I really like that. And that was over 74 innings. So that's a guy who I would really, he's ready to, I think, make the Syracuse move if they can hold on to him. I think I mentioned Morris is number 8, and I like him. It's a little early. He was their third round pick last year out of UNLV. He locates, and I mentioned it here, he's got a repeatable delivery, and that's one of the first things that pitching coaches and pitching instructors look for. He's got, I mentioned mound moxie and fire in the belly. I love that. So he's a guy I would keep my eye on. But again, he's a couple of years away. Suarez is 1 year away. I think Hamill, unfortunately, the ship is leaving the harbor on him. I think that he really needs to have a good finish to this season. He's got some good stuff. I mean, a slider at 3,000 RPM. But this is it, man. Something's got to happen here. I'm not saying they would get rid of him. I'm sure they would trade him in the right deal.
And you would that might get you a reliever. I mean, Hamill could get you David Robertson back if Texas decides to sell. It might be able to get you Yates back. I don't know if it'll get you Tanner Scott. It depends on how much the competition wants to give up. And I'm not sold on Tanner Scott. I hate that walk rate. I mean, if you look at Tanner Scott this year, is he evolving? We'll see. Suarez, knowing that he's a Rule 5 draftee, this comes into play. The Mets feel they're not going to have room for him. You might as well trade him now. Make him somebody else's complex equation to put on the 40-man. So you're right. You know, as I talk to you, as we dive into this, compared to the open where I'm like, hey, do we really want to see the Mets give up assets right now? For personally, John Flaherty will help the Mets. Jack Flaherty will help the Mets. John Flaherty on the mind over there. I'm getting it all bunched up. Flaherty will help the Mets in 2024, but I don't believe he's a guy that you could count on to stay healthy and you'd want to sign a long-term deal after this year. So if you give up a Dom Hamill for him, you truly are giving up somebody who has some upside and was looked at as one of the premier pitchers in the organization before he struggled at AAA, and you could regret it in 2 years. He could be somebody that's starting and giving good, league minimum production for Detroit or for whoever they go on. But I guess that's the risk. And with this new front office, you don't know what they think of what they have as a holdover. We have to all realize that the Mets have had 4 or 5 player development guys over the last 6 or 7 years. So this could be this is where this is so wild, where it's going to be fascinating in the next 2 days. We're going to learn what Stearns thinks about his current farm system and how much does he want to hug these prospects that he inherited when he took over last year.
Mm-hmm. I think if a team like the Tigers could get a Hamill and say one of a position player from the Mets who's in the top position player, let's say in the mid 20s, 24, 25. I think they'd be doing pretty well. Hamill, one of the things about him, his walk ratio is way too high, but he has a what pro scouts call a carry fastball, 20-plus inches of vertical break. It's moving. It seems like it's rising. And he has a repertoire, that slider, curveball, changeup, and a cutter. So, that's a lot of stuff, and he's got size, and he's 25, so he's starting to get up there. A lot of pro scouts don't like players who are too old, and at 25 you start getting into that range. But it's according to what they would have in mind and what their scouts see. I gladly give him up for a rental player, but you can't do that with too many guys.
Absolutely. Texas just announced that they're going to put Michael Lorenzen out there. That's another arm, possibly. They're hesitant, it looks like, to do much more. Let's move to the position player side. And this is actually fascinating to me, because since the whole Wheeler, Harvey, Syndergaard, Mats, and let's remember, they acquired Wheeler and Syndergaard. They developed them, but they acquired them. They didn't draft them. The Mets have really been position player centric. Conforto, Pete Alonso, Jeff McNeil, Brandon Nimmo. There's been a long, long time since they've actually had any impactful pitchers come up. I mean, Scott's one of the first in a long time. And now you're starting to see, with their offense, and some people have said it, where you see what's going on with Pete Carl Armstrong in Chicago with his struggles. What are the Mets kind of doing? Jared Kelenic. Kelenic in Atlanta. And the whole hubble, are we even debating that trade now? So you look at the Mets' top five, and you point this out, there's a lot of injuries on there. One of their top positional players, Ronnie Mauricio, is out for the year. Freak accident, ACL, but whatever, still is injured. Drew Gilbert had the longest hamstring injury I've ever seen. And Acuna's been up and down. Acuna's not necessarily his brother, but you kind of expected maybe him to work into the mix with the big league club by now, especially with the way Jeff McNeil was playing before his post-All-Star break, renaissance. So when you look at this top five, there's no guarantee that these guys will be impact players. In a lot of ways, I'm more comfortable trading from this group than from the pitching group, just because I know how expensive pitching is. Do you agree with that? And talk a little bit about these positional guys, these top 15
okay,
guys.
So I don't necessarily agree with that, but that doesn't mean that I wouldn't trade out of this group. So the way that this kind of happened was, yes, the four guys, I have Acuna, Gilbert, Mauricio, Williams, and Reimer in that order. Now, you could have taken especially those first four, and you could have put them in any order. It wouldn't have mattered. But the reason that I put Acuna there is the only reason that I think makes sense. He's the only guy who's played the whole season. The other four guys below all have missed most of the season, or in Mauricio's case, the entire season. So it's just Acuna ends up there. Now, if Acuna had played the first 2 months like he played the last 2 months, probably he would have been the guy coming up instead of Iglesias. So clearly that playing poorly in the first 2 months of the season was a detriment to Acuna personally and financially. So I think that's what happened there. Now, as far as the other guys, I really like Ronnie Mauricio. I think that, you could have easily put him first. He showed to me, he was ready to play Major League Baseball. He's a big body guy who has a good glove and good hands. He has speed, steals bases almost at will. I mean, for a big man, it was really fun to watch. I think that he has everything it takes already to be a Major League player. Now, the other thing is, I think he plays into the equation about Pete Alonso potentially leaving the Mets, because you can either move Vientos. Vientos has proved to me he's a major league hitter. I don't think he's going to go into a free fall. He knows how to hit. He's resilient. And his fielding, I think, has surprised everybody. He's a powerful arm.
He's been passable at third. I mean, there's a few things I could quibble with his routes to balls and how quickly he gets it out and the transfer, but his arm is really good. It makes up for a lot
his
of that.
Arm is,
so.
His arm is great. And so he could either be kept there or he could be moved to first, and Mauricio can play third base, or Mauricio might be the Ernie Banks type, the guy who started his career at shortstop but was moved to first base. Mauricio is 6'3". He's a big man, and he's very agile. So having a nice, agile first baseman who understands how to play the infield, that's good too. So you have some versatility there, that, and with Pete potentially leaving, I think that gives the Mets some other options. And so that, to me, kept him in that top three. Jet Williams is somebody I wouldn't trade. I wouldn't even consider trading. He's got speed. I know the scouts love him. I have friends who are scouts for other teams, and they all loved him as a high school player. So he's now Reimer. I don't think anybody's had him near the top 10 on their list.
Nobody's talking about him. You put him as the system sleeper, and that is because he's missed a bit of time, but you like him a lot.
I like him a lot because I say it at the end, the last sentence in here, the kind of plate discipline that he exhibits, which is a lot like Brandon Nimmo, it's just not teachable. It's something that's just something that you're born with. You develop as you play through your youth baseball and then your high school baseball and your college baseball. He's a corner infielder, very much leaning towards third base. That's where he's played most of the time. He had in 111 major league games, I'm sorry, minor league games, he has 88 strikeouts, but 69 base on balls. I mean, that's worth noting, especially from a guy who appears to be a power hitter. He will develop into being a power hitter. So, and his in zone contact rate is 91%. I mean, that is just really high. So I'm very excited about him. Everything he puts out there in all his minor league games, 74 base on balls, 94 strikeouts in 388 at bats with a 780 OPS and a 401 on base percentage. So to me, that's as a hitter, that's what you're looking for. Now, will that play through, you know, getting to Binghamton and getting to Syracuse? Well, we'll see, but he's on the right track. And so that's why I liked him, and that's why I think he should be included there.
And if you look at the bottom five into 6 to 10, it just shows you what a good job. I know everybody criticizes Billy Epler, and you could criticize a lot of things, but Ryan Clifford, part of the Verlander deal, Jeremy Rodriguez they got for Tommy Pham, who is a scrap heap value pickup in the winter that turned himself into a very valuable offensive piece on the 23 Mets. Playing well for Chicago this year, maybe gets traded in the next couple of days. And then you have Marco Vargas and Ronald Hernandez, who they got for Robertson, a closer that went to Miami and didn't do well after he was traded. So a lot of imports. Now, Clifford is the one that gets the most attention because of his prodigious home runs, especially when he was down in Brooklyn, not an easy place to hit. But to me, he's got a lot of low floor, high ceiling, whatever it may be. I could see him turning into Joey Gallo. I don't like swing and miss guys. I just don't like guys who just hit for power, nothing else. Some, like you said, feel maybe he's the better of the two in the deal. He is the one to me at number six that could create the most debate because the rest, Hernandez, Vargas, Lara, Jeremy Rodriguez, that's about development. There's still a work in progress. They're truly diamonds in the rough. Clifford's a little bit closer, but Clifford to me gets the pub, but I don't know what to think about him. He's not the type of prospect that excites me usually, that Joey Gallo type.
Well, but he's here because the power, you know, it's chicks like the long ball, right?
Yep.
So that's why he's here. And he has a good approach to the game. I just heard an interview with him this week, or you know, I've probably heard three or four interviews. I like his whole attitude. But he's there because there's something very exciting about guys who can take it deep. But to me, the guy on this next five is Rodriguez. Now they got him for Tommy Pham. So I think this was a great deal for a rental player. He got $1.2 million coming out of the DR as an international signing. I mean, great bat to ball, plus speed, glove is great, rangy. I mean, he's just one of those prospects who could turn into the Mets second baseman of the future without a doubt.
Playing a little third base, too, down in the Florida Coast League.
And so, you know, to me, that's an exciting – and listen to some of the things with him. And he's a left-handed hitter, so that's another thing. The Mets recently have gotten much more right-handed than they had been in many years. And, you know, that's partly because Martinez is a right-handed DH, and you have you know, you have an infield where Beatty was taken out of the infield. We lost what they expected to be a consequential left-handed bat, and he's replaced by a right-handed batter. So developing some left-handed hitting is an important thing. So in this group, so you have Clifford, you have Rodriguez, you have Vargas, and then Hernandez is a switch-hitting catcher, which is hard to find. So, but the numbers on Rodriguez, this is his minor league. He's very young, 18. 54 base on balls with 68 strikeouts in 362 ABs. And he has 36 stolen base, an 813 OPS, 382 on base percentage. Again, it's early. He's an A ball, but those numbers talk. And he's a guy you want to keep your eyes on, and especially got him for a rental player. I mean, just great.
Yep.
Lara is another interesting guy because young, he looks older. He has an interesting physical makeup. He's a little stocky, about a 5'10 guy, but it's got a little bit of power. It's got a little bit of speed, but he could wear every glove on the field. He literally played every position except pitcher and catcher, and he seems to do reasonably well at all the positions. So he's got that maybe moniker of a utility player. So he's another guy I would keep my eye on. Would other teams be interested in him? Well, probably not, because teams tend to be interested in guys who aren't utility men unless they've proven that in the show. So, but he's a guy I like. I probably should have switched Hernandez and Vargas here, but it doesn't much matter. I think the fact that they got these two guys for Robertson as a rental player, to me, was another steal, because all they need is one of these guys to make it. Vargas is kind of like hits the ball all over the field. He's kind of heady. He's got some speed. And he's had – actually, I think I mentioned that he had more base on balls. It was actually slightly more strikeouts, but he almost has an equal amount of base on balls to strikeouts. It is A-level ball. Hernandez – oh, I really like Hernandez. He has some numbers that will just blow you away. He's played four MILB seasons. He has 40 this year at his highest level, which is at Port St. Lucie. 44 base on ball, 78 strikeouts from a switch hitting catcher, and 282 ABs. He's got a 754 OPS and a 382 on base percentage. And he's a good catcher. He does everything well, and he even steals a few bags. So you've got somebody there who is a really interesting pickup. And again, switch hitting catchers are not around. They're very hard to find.
Even you mentioned, you know, with Lindor at shortstop, potentially Alvarez, somebody that they've already admitted they're talking about a long-term deal with when he gets his agency situations finalized. Mets still going after the elite talent of those positions. And if you go to the last tier of the top 15, Yovani Rodriguez, another catcher. And then after that, you've got a lot of guys with tools and talent, but you don't really know what to make of them. Parada struggled a lot after being a hitter out of Georgia Tech. Colin Houck, high school player, number one draft pick, football player, struggling mightily. Alex Ramirez has struggled for years down the minors, never living up to his potential. Boston Barrow is somebody that has started to get some attention from the prospect crowd. In this group, who do you think might worm their way up? Like we talked about from the pitching side, Who do you think a year from now, maybe we're talking about in a much different light out of this bottom third group?
Barrow. I think he's a guy who he was a high school player. He was ready to go to UCLA. So you're not going to get, you're not going to be recruited by UCLA if you're not a good player. He has all the tools. He's put on about 20 pounds since he from graduating high school till now. He's very athletic. I mean, look at his numbers. I mean, you know, he's very impressive, and I have no reason to believe he's not going to continue to grow. He's not going to continue to learn. He's a good student of the game. So, you know, this is a guy who I think could make the move through here to the next level or beyond next year at the same time. You know, Rodriguez, the cat, Giovanni Rodriguez, who they've Mets paid $2.85 million as an international signing, and that by half of their pool money for this year. He's 17. He's got all kinds of interesting skills, but, you know, it's just no way to – you put him in there because – partly because the Mets paid him so much money, but he has the tools. My biggest disappointment, but a lot of scouts did not like Parada and couldn't understand why the Mets drafted him in the first round. And everything that these friends of mine who were scouts have said has come true. He basically is kind of a one-dimensional hitter. I mean, he has some power. He might turn into at best kind of a cheap version of Martinez as a DH, but he was a catcher, and he's still catching. So what I said before about teams looking for a guy who maybe is a DH or a first baseman who can catch, because then they've got the third catcher on that roster should they need it. So that is kind of his thing. He could be a DH who has some skill behind the plate, although his skills behind the plate are very deficient. And then Houck. Think about Houck. He's struggling. He was an athlete. You know, in this case, their first-round draft choice was an athlete. He was somebody who was a great football player. I mean, he amassed like 2,600 yards passing in high school. You know, that's just an amazing number. So I think that they took a chance. It'll be a long progression to see if he actually gets there. I mean, he's 19. I mean, it could be 4 or 5 years before they know if they have something. And that basically leaves Ramirez, who, you know, I say it here, why is he still on the top 15 even? Well, it's because he has all the physical tools. The package is unbelievable. And they paid him $2 million. That was a pretty big international signing as well. But he's got all these things. He's toolsy, I call him. You know, he's fast. He's got a powerful arm. He's a big athletic body. But if you can't put it all together and you're still 30 bases, but you only have 4 home runs and 38 RBI, you got to really wonder. And that's in 300 at bats.
You're not even looking at it. You're looking at 4A backup outfielder type of performance at that point.
Well, I don't think he's even at the 4A level yet, but that might be a ceiling.
Sure.
So, yes. Yeah, and then, you know, there's a couple. A.J. Ewing, who was on my attracting attention list, had a really great game yesterday. I think it was 3 for 3 and a couple of walks. And I think he had a bomb. And Morabito is a very interesting outfielder. Jesus Baez, only 19 or 18, very interesting. You know, they could easily make the list. All three of those guys could be on this list next year.
As we wrap up, and if you want to check out for free, subscribe Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. That's will bring you there, and then you can do your signups, free trials if you guys want to do it, all sorts of stuff. But Dave did a great job putting together this list. And to wrap up here, Dave, put a bow on it. After this exercise and looking at this and doing all your research, Steve Cohen came in, said he wanted to be the East Coast Dodgers. Obviously, they're always going to be compared to the Yankees in some way, shape, or form. The Yankees do a great job marketing their minor leaguers. We'll see how the package for Chisholm works out. you know, the package for Soto, how that works out for the Padres. Michael King is decent, but you know, you gave up a Ted Williams in that deal. You should get something back. How did the Mets stack up on that? And then let's also look at John Middleton. He of the tobacco fortune down in Philadelphia. Dombrowski, another big move. He has no fear in trading away prospects, maybe overpaying a little bit for Estevez, somebody that I know the Mets had their eyes on. You have these three organizations, one that's their brother, you know, big brother across town. And then obviously the Dodgers and the Phillies, more importantly, that will be in their way from getting out of the National League if the Mets want to achieve their goal and finally win their first World Series since 1986. So how do you see the Mets now under this Stearns very early and his, you know, Gross and all these guys that he's brought over? How do you see that they stack up against those barometers that Cohen put out there and the media has put out there as well?
So let me say first, because you mentioned the Phillies, I think that putting Hayes in left field, moving Marsh to center, you know, making sure that they have a good defensive mix in left and center field, it was a big boon to them. Plus, Estevez, man, that's exactly what they needed. They needed a shutdown closer, somebody who could come. I thought maybe a few days ago when the Mets were really on the march, maybe there's an outside chance they can catch the Phillies. Now I kind of go, the Phillies are awfully good. I think if they don't get to the World Series, I'd be really surprised. And if they didn't win it, I'd be almost equally surprised, because I don't think there's another team out there right now as good as the Phillies. As far as what I think, the Mets trying to be the Dodgers, well, the Dodgers are going through their own struggles right now, and it's not so dissimilar to what the Yankees are going through. You can't build a baseball team around three players. The Yankees around two players. That's NBA stuff.
You can do that in the NBA. You can't do that in baseball.
It's not MLB stuff. And I think that's what both of those teams are suffering from. I think what the Mets are doing under Stearns, I totally support and find it interesting, if not fascinating, to watch what Stearns doing. Because not only did he have to take the team that he was given and make it a winner, but he also had to bring in people he could work with, which I think this manager is a special guy. And I think that the players respond to him. I think his relationships with the front office, with the media, all seem positive to me. Of course, we never know exactly what's going on. But and I think most of all, Stearns had to convince Cohen that there was a different way of doing business that made more sense financially. It made more sense in terms of Cohen really wanted to be the East Coast Dodgers, then building the farm system is a really important way to go. And so he's not giving away the talent, at least he hasn't yet. As I said, Tyler Stewart, I would have rather they kept, but, you know, as far as what they gave away, Ryland Thomas, so okay, that's fine. And I think that they're on the right track, and I think it's because of Stearns and to some degree to Cohen, because he's willing to listen. Some owners are not willing to listen. So, and I could talk about the Angels owner who, you know, clearly turned down the opportunity to get some people for his, you know, Otani. And so I think we're in a good situation here. I think Mets fans should be positive. I think they should be encouraging. You know, everything you see is encouraging to me. I think to you as well. And it's going to continue. It's not like it's going to end. Stearns isn't going to get stupid fast. He's setting the parameters for those of us who are willing to pay attention.
Absolutely. So this was a great job by you, David. Looking forward to more. I assume we have a shortstops column in the near future. Obviously, for those listening, if you're a free subscriber, everything David puts out there is for free. We hope you join us on the paid content side. But if not, you know, you're welcome every week, every Sunday. The Talking Mets podcast will always be free to all you guys. David, thanks for so much time on this Sunday and this second part of the show. And let's catch up again, my friend. Looking forward to the next iteration of your contribution.
Thank you, man. Keep it going.
David Mills, contributor to Talking Mets. Great stuff there. Lot to dive into. It'll be a fascinating final 48 hours that we're going to be seeing. If it was appointment television for Senga and everything that went on with the Subway Series, like I said, the next 2 days, you're going to be glued to MLB trade rumors and X or however how you consume your trade deadline information. So want to thank David Mills for contributing, doing that great job on the first ever Talking Mets prospect list. I know what my strengths are and what I'm not, and prospects are something that I don't spend time down in these systems. I don't have the kind of contacts that a David has or an Ernest Dove or guys like that. So I'm glad that I had a chance to have David work on this. And then obviously I gave my insight as well, but I want to thank everybody for tuning in for another edition of the Talking Mets podcast. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at Talking Mets No G and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, Talking Mets No G. And of course, don't forget the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks on the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. We'll be back. We'll be back way before Sunday. Special trade edition of the show coming up. We'll see if it's going to be Tuesday, Wednesday. We'll see what the news cycle indicates. Till then, take care, everybody.
For the park and greet the Mets. Hot dogs, green grass, all out of shade. Guaranteed to have a heck of a day, because those Mets are really rocking that ball, hitting those home runs over the wall. And in New Jersey, Brooklyn, Queens, or town and down. Let's go Mets! That's the cheer all over New York town.
Mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.